Did you lock it?
I think so.
Oh, shall I just check?
I think so.
I'll just check. Hang on. What? You're going to love this. Not only was it locked, well done to one of us, whoever that was, the closed sign has also been on all day rather than the open sign.
We had people come past earlier. They were looking at the posters for our workshop.
Well, this is going very well.
I thought they were
going
to come in. This is why they didn't come in.
We had the closed sign up.
We're dickheads. That's what we are.
This is Gas Bags. She's Sophie and I'm Anna. This podcast's about the good bits, bad bits of having a business, to the sounds that we've recorded out and about, and finally, podcast swapping, all from our podcast studio, Soundyard.
In the good bits, we catch up after a week spent apart.
And in the bad bits, we reflect on why money is just so awkward.
My found sound is a simple yet serene number from my house.
Podcast-wise, my choice is something that we all have experience of. It's the story of where we all began.
And my podcast looks at the morality of sponsoring high-risk stunts.
I made it. I'm back off holiday. We don't make life easy for ourselves on holiday. People go camping. They choose to camp.
I like camping.
Yeah. You say that, and then it gets to it. And you're like, oh. We were in a camper van, so very much the
posh.
The posh standard of camping. It's a small space, though. It was fine. I only hit one wing mirror.
What, whilst driving it?
Whilst driving it, yeah. Oh. To be fair, that van was in the middle of the road. Then I went and bought a Bakewell tart from Bakewell to make myself feel a bit happier.
Wow. What was that like?
Delicious. Mm. They've got a really, and unlike other Bakewells that you may buy from shops, these Bakewells have got a really thick layer of icing on the top, which for me, it's all about the icing.
You do love icing.
For most children, it's all about the icing. And yeah, absolutely wonderful. We had to buy three.
Oh, had to do.
Yeah, well, one for Mum because she looked after the cat who didn't die.
The
leaky cat. She's still gracing us with her presence. So we had to get one for Mother for looking after Frenchie. We had to get one for Granddad for looking after Fergus the dog, who I couldn't cope with in the van. And, of course, one for us. Mm. Very nice.
You had a nice time then?
Yes. We walked a lot and we have like this rucksack thing to put baby Billy in, which is very heavy. We saw a stoat, which excited me far too much. Because obviously in Norfolk, where we're from, they have hedgerows between the fields. That's very boring. But bear with. In the Peak District and in many other places, they have dry stone walls and people learn how to do it. I mean, you'd think it'd be quite easy, wouldn't you? I was pondering on the idea that I wonder which has more wildlife, a hedge or a wall. And then we saw a stoat running by the wall and some mice. I didn't get my phone out quick enough to record the sound of them having a row. But we heard that. We were so close to it. It was really exciting. And I thought, well, yeah, dry stone walls. Maybe a mixture of the two would be really beneficial. But there we are. I'm not a farmer. So I haven't got a field.
I'm trying to think why we don't have stone walls here. I guess it's just
we haven't got the stone.
There we go.
Never mind. We went in a cave. Cave was really good. A couple of caves, actually. It was a great experience. And a cable car took us up. And, you know, everyone loves a cable car.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that. Then we went on an 8.5 mile walk the next day.
Wow.
That went right up to the top of Kinder Scout. And it was really, like, boggy and peaty. And Billy loved it up to the point that his Wellington got stuck in the mud. And then he had to have a quick change at the top of this thing. Exposed his bottom to the whole of the Peak District and Edale. But yeah, he loved it. He absolutely loved it. And it was a proper adventure.
Oh, what a lush week. You've been very missed at Soundyard.
Oh.
I've been rattling around here.
Sweeping.
Sweeping.
Dusting.
Crying. missing you.
Oh.
It's been, do you know what? I've had quite a productive week.
which, you know,
I'm not sure what that says about us working together. We had a nice recording here that is a podcast that's actually been released this week. Lucy came in, Lucy Isle, and Lucy's doing a podcast called Forgive Me, Lucy, which is something that we've developed with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there now, so you can go and have a listen to it.
Been released. It's in the ether. And it's very funny.
It's hilarious and definitely worth checking out. Otherwise, what else can I tell you about my week? Made butter and cheese.
You made butter and cheese?
Went and bought some raw milk.
Right.
From a farm in a vending machine.
Right.
Have you ever done that?
Nope.
It's great. They get the cow milk, put it in a vending machine, and you go and get raw milk so it's not been pasteurised or anything, which is great for making cheese. I don't know how I got onto this, but yeah, we made some cheese, which I obviously can't even taste because I don't eat dairy.
Yeah, I was confused at the fact that you made butter and cheese. Why would you do this?
We've had a lot of chats this week with the kids about
Where food comes from
and how cheese and stuff is made.
So are you going to do sausages another week? Or?
Absolutely not. I draw the line. Butter's easy. You get some cream and you shake it up however you want to and it separates and there you go, you've got butter.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told it was quite tasty. I wouldn't know. Oh. That's my news. That's what I've done this week. Sandy Yard is still here.
Yes, yeah.
And we may be able to extend our business to dairy.
Thank you to everybody who's been in touch with plant advice for our lion-fested fungal friends in the pots that we've got here. We are doing it. We are spraying them daily and it's going to be fine.
Yep.
We've got rid of the ones that are the main culprits, we think, and there are far fewer.
There's only a couple flying around now.
Yeah, we'll solve them. We'll sort those out.
It's going to be all right. Bad bits. So this is about that awkward elephant in the room. That is money when you're trying to figure out a project or negotiate something that you're going to do with another person or another group. Discuss.
It is very awkward. It's been made awkward by society. I was once told by a boss, you don't discuss how much you get paid. They're trying to make it an office thing. They don't think they quite understood that was adding to the office culture that you perhaps want to get rid of. The idea of asking for money to get paid still feels really dirty. Is that right? Does it feel dirty for you?
Awkward.
Awkward.
Definitely awkward for me. I don't like that bit at all. A lot of the time I have this sort of inclination to want to really discount or give people a really good deal at our or my detriment. And it's like a reflex. I think I really do value our skills. I don't think it's to do with that. I do believe that what we charge for what we do, given our experience, is really good value anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe it's quite a British thing.
Is there a way to... You write really nicely.
What, when I'm asking for money?
when you're telling people what things cost,
yeah.
That's the awkwardness, isn't it? Like... Mm. You're always second-guessing, have we offered anything here for free? Or at what stage do you introduce the money elephant into this conversation? We're working with a wonderful team at the moment who came to us and said, this is our budget, what can you do with that? Fantastic. We all know where we are then. We know we're getting this much and we know we can give them this amount of our time for that amount of money. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. I can work like that. It's the negotiation or the, I thought it could just be a chat. And like, at what stage does just a chat become a consultation? It's difficult, isn't it?
Yes, establishing those boundaries in your head, then keeping them with people when you're talking to them. I think what's happening is you're weighing up, you know, how much you want to work with this person, what that would mean to you besides the money part. You probably really want them to come on board and do whatever projects on the table. So there's an element of like, oh, please don't go. But at the same time, I can't remember where I heard this advice. This is a long time ago and it rattles around in my head. Basically, the way that this can pan out is that people will pay for your services and you'll get paid what feels a fair amount and you'll do a fair job for that price and everyone leaves happy. Or you heavily discount what you're doing. You end up not feeling satisfied with what you're getting paid. You probably won't do the most amazing job on it because you're not feeling that satisfied. They then become dissatisfied. And actually, you could be putting that energy into that first pool of people that want to come on board.
Yeah, that is really good advice, isn't it?
Mm.
And I can think of times where we've hit that snag and gone down the wrong way.
Yeah, but then there are also projects, you know, that we've worked on or just in general where you approach it totally differently. You know it's worth discounting, yes, or doing for free, mm, because there's intrinsic value in what's going to come of it. Mm.
We're not complacent with a wage for a project. If we know that we're happy, and yes, you're right, if you go away happy with what you're being paid and you feel it's fair, you will put more into it because you think it deserves it. And they've given you the respect of payment and you're returning that respect with a really quality product.
Mm.
That's a great one. Well done.
I'd like to claim it, but I've definitely heard it from someone and I'm not even crediting them. So if you know that's you, thank you.
Yeah.
Found sound this week comes from me, and it's quite a simple one. As you heard, I've been doing a bit of homesteading this week with my butter and the cheese. I'm kidding. I've just been hanging around the house quite a lot. And there was this moment when my kids went out the other day, and I've been doing a lot of stuff in my garden. I've made a wildlife pond at the bottom. I showed you it this morning, actually, when
gorgeous.
You came round. And I've just really this week been enjoying the change of the season, being able to be outside and to look at nature, and I just get a lot of pleasure from that. I know lots of people do, but I forget it in winter.
Mm.
I don't connect as well with winter, and then when spring comes I remember how important it feels to be outside. So anyway, I've been doing that a lot this week. The kids went out, I used my phone, which I don't usually do for found sound. Mm. You were saying last week about how it can be an amazing, powerful tool. And so I just recorded the sound of my garden with the kids out. I walked down it. I live in a urban environment, so you hear the sound of cars in the background, but you also hear the birds in the trees in the gardens around us. And at the end, I flick a stick in the pond, so you hear that too.
It's
very simple.
I love with the birds, you get like a rhythm with them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the wood pigeon, then the blackbird, and just sort of interchanging, and the rumble of the cars. That's really nice.
I liked the simplicity of it this week. It embodies how my week has felt. When you're taught about audio and what we teach as well, as if you're going to go out and record an interview or record anything really to get what we call wild track, which is where you use your recorder, whatever it is you're recording on, and you just record the environment that you're in without talking, without anyone interrupting it with their voices either, for anywhere between sort of a minute and 2 minutes. And you can use that to kind of stitch everything together or to just have a sense of the place. And yeah, that's the sort of thing that you'd record if you were doing wild track. A simple found sound this week, but one I thoroughly enjoyed recording.
Oh, I could hear the sun on your back.
And then they crashed back into the house.
Podcast swap time, and I shall go first. We have a really interesting one for this week from me, I think. I've gone for a podcast called Child. It's made by BBC Radio 4, and it looks at the very beginnings of life. They tell the story of how children grow from fertilisation to first birthday. And they look at that with science, with society, and with history as well. And it's a really lovely blend of the three for each episode. I think when you have children, the most comparison or source of information available is of size, isn't it? So you get from lentil to satsuma to orange to grapefruit.
Oh, when you're pregnant.
When you're pregnant. Yeah. Honeydew melon to watermelon, and you think this is utterly ridiculous. And I think this touches on people rethinking that connection to their bodies and also thinking about their parents. If you don't have children yourself, like you were born, so, you know, it's just an interesting place to visit. The sound design on this is beautiful. It really adds something. I listen to a lot of podcasts when sound design is just an afterthought to stop
audio sounding too dry. But this has really been, it really helps to sort of move sections along. But it's still very concise. Like every episode is 13, 14 minutes. So quite short, but really lovely and really well thought out and put together. They touch on those moments in history when it went from a doctor or health professional would be the first person to tell a woman that they are pregnant, to then the development of the pregnancy test and how that has changed. Like the woman is the first person to now know, and you can find out soon whether you are or not pregnant. They used to use toads to tell you whether you were pregnant or not, which is unbelievable, isn't it?
Toads.
Yeah, toads. Yeah. There's, I said, they put urine near a toad. Yeah, I think a lot of the time they were injecting women's urine into things, and then the next day, if the toad had laid eggs, then it meant that you were pregnant. This is like not long ago. It's amazing, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, this podcast in particular forces you to like relive that moment if you've had it of finding out that you're pregnant. Or wondering maybe how your mum found out that she was expecting you and the science there and the feelings there. I was in our yellow bathroom. It sounds like we've got hundreds of bathrooms. They're just brightly coloured. And it's just that moment that you think, oh, my life is going to change unbelievably forever, actually, from this time. And I've still got my pregnancy test. Have you still got yours?
Yeah. Yeah.
And just that overwhelming feeling of, I knew this could happen and it's happened and I just don't know what the rest of it looks like. And this is what this podcast does. It takes you to those places. And it made me think about my mum as well and how she never knew she was pregnant for a long time. And her nursey friends were like, well, you're a nurse. You're really exhausted. She was a district nurse and she had to stop and fall asleep in the car for a certain amount of time. People were like, do you think you're pregnant? No, she said. And yes, she was. So it's a sort of podcast where you can listen to an episode and then talk about your experiences with a friend, a sibling or anyone. And that's the part that they don't have in it, that sort of communal chat about it. But it's a really lovely starter. It also highlights like the horrendous injustices that are still experienced during pregnancy in our society and as a parent anyway. The fact that there's like limited evidence about occasional like drinking for pregnant women, but actually more instances of miscarriage from partners drinking and domestic abuse and violence like that. And like the judgment of mothers when they're pregnant, rather than considering that air pollution has the same impact as smoking does on a fetus is unbelievable. And it's a lot easier to put that burden on a mum than address the expensive, like societal, environmental infrastructure or lack of in this case. I think that's really interesting and uncomfortable because it's one thing being talked about, but what is done. And that's what I find frustrating. It's packed with digestible science. I don't want anyone to be put off, think it's a really sciencey. It's not. Each episode really combines that history, society and science. It's really nicely done. And it's been interesting to speak to my mum about it. And she was the one that recommended it, how her pregnancy differed from mine. But it's also really good to hear like professional voices as well, like women's experience in the workplace of telling an employer that they're pregnant and the impacts of that. You hear from a wonderful charity called Pregnant Then Screwed. And they support people that are expecting and that are maybe facing difficulties at work. Most parents I know have an experience of that. There's 27 episodes. 15-minute, 10-minute chunk. It's really nice to consume. The host is India Rakerson, and she is amazing. And she's expecting in this as well. It's a really lovely introduction to how she's feeling in her journey too. If you've been a mum or you were born, you can definitely relate to this podcast. It's good.
That sounds great.
Hmm. I'm bringing something slightly different to the table.
Okay.
When you are scrolling social media on your phone, I try not to do this very much anymore in general, but you know the posts that you get between the ones that you've followed? So if you're on Instagram and you've got people that you follow and you see their posts, but then the algorithm suggests a lot of other content for you from people you don't follow.
Yeah.
What does yours mainly consist of? That's quite an intrusive question.
Usually parenting, gardening, or a lot of African culture.
Okay. I have a mixture as well, that a large percentage of mine is base jumping. And other extreme sports.
Bearing in mind, the most extreme sport you've done is synchronised swimming.
Actually, I have done two other sports that I would say are slightly more adventurous than synchronised swimming.
I can think of one, yeah.
Anyway, we'll come on to that. I'm probably not the person you think of when you talk about base jumping, but I've always been quite drawn to extreme sports. And so watching them, obviously. And I have sat with this a lot this week, thinking about why. But I was very excited when a podcast that I regularly listen to and have recommended on Gasbags before, which is Tortoise Media's Slow Newscast, had this episode, which is called Dangerous Games, Red Bull's Killer PR. The journalist on this is Claudia Williams, and this is all hooked around the question of whether a company who pays athletes that partake in extreme sports and risk their lives has moral culpability for the accidents and deaths that sometimes happen with this. So Red Bull in question here, I think we all well know, is synonymous with extreme sports. And a lot of those stunts are a huge form of marketing for Red Bull. So this podcast is less than an hour long. It's just one episode of the Slow Newscast. And Claudia explores this question, but also gives a sort of overview of the rise of base jumping threaded throughout the podcast, which I find really interesting. Do you know what base jumping is?
Yes, I think so.
So it's basically jumping off any sort of height and deploying a parachute before you get to the ground. And a lot of the extreme stunts that are done in base jumping are from heights that are obviously very high, but actually not that high. And so that reaction time and pulling your parachute in order to make a safe landing is, you're talking like, you know, fractions of seconds. So it was really interesting throughout this podcast to hear about like how that started and the rise of it and the popularity of it, and it tying into this question of moral culpability as well. She talks about Lauterbrunnen, which is a small village in Switzerland. It's unbelievably picturesque. So you've got a valley of sheer cliff faces covered in like lush green landscapes above and below. Beautiful. Very popular with base jumping. Connected to this, it has the nickname the Valley of Death. So it's a very, very dangerous sport. The people who live in this village know all too well the risks that come with it. It's become part of their lives. Do you remember when Red Bull sponsored the stunt? It was called Red Bull Stratus, I think. And it was Austrian skydiver Felix Baumgartner who jumped from a helium balloon free-falling in a pressure suit from outside the atmosphere, into the atmosphere, broke the sound barrier. I'm not sure whether it was technically a skydive or a base jump, but he jumped from out of space.
Wow.
Travelled the 24 miles down.
I think I do remember this happening.
Just to give you a sense of the scale of these stunts that Red Bull have organised and sponsored, it covers the specific story of Shane McConkie as well, who was a Red Bull-sponsored athlete, pioneered ski base, which is when you ski off cliffs and deploy a parachute. We hear from his partner about his death and her perspective on Red Bull's culpability. I don't want to tell you all the ins and outs of this podcast. It's only an hour long and you might be really interested in hearing it firsthand. So
it's really intriguing, isn't it? Do you come away with your own opinion on it, or is it just, you know, facts all laid out?
I found that I came away from it feeling more informed on the topic, but I don't feel like I necessarily have like an opinion that falls in any camp. I think it's a complex subject. And I wonder whether I'm morally culpable. I'm part of a huge amount of people that like to watch these stunts, and I'm drawn to extreme sports. And while I would never like to think that I'm actively encouraging people to push risk to the point of it being super high risk, I am drawn to watching the videos. So I probably do have moral culpability in there somewhere too. It got me thinking about why I'm drawn to this. I think it's something to do with being enthralled by the feats of human endeavour and seeing how far people can push that. But at the same time, like, the risk does make me uncomfortable. I think growing up in a house where, you know, my dad's didn't jump out of the stratosphere, but he did wrote The Atlantic by himself. And so I don't know if it's like the household I've grown up in. I've dipped my toe in different sports. So I trained to do subaqua diving. And so much of that is being sat in a classroom, learning about the theory and the risk. I did motorcycle dirt track racing. It was so much fun. I have watched races where people have had really serious accidents. And, you know, ambulances have been called. And actually, a lot of the time, the people who are involved in those accidents will have periods of recovery if they're lucky, if they haven't been so seriously hurt they can't race again, and then we'll race again. This podcast was compelling to me, and Red Bull don't respond to Tortoise Media's media requests, so you don't hear from them. You do hear about a big brand who did decide to pull out of this kind of sponsorship. I just think this is a very, very interesting topic. I love anything that has some kind of moral question going on with it as well. And this one is a big one. I loved it.
Brilliant.
So, gas bags, this week on our Instagram, I put up lots of handy links to the podcasts that we've been featuring at the end of each episode. So if you go to Gas Bags Pod, that's our Instagram handle, have a look on the highlights, you will see that all of the podcast recommendations are in one nice, neat place with pictures and quotes.
And if you want to get in touch with any emails or found sounds that you've come across, you can. It's hello@soundyard.org.